This is Continent of Media, number 0304. Glenn Hauser here with the more or less monthly supplement to my other program, World of Radio. Continent of Media is shortwave broadcast exclusively by Radio for Peace International on this schedule, Thursdays at 2000 UT and Saturdays at 2130. The repeats are UT Fridays at 0200, 0830, and 1430. And Sundays at 0330, 930, and 1530 on 7445 and or 15039. You may also listen to this and previous editions of Continent Media via www.dxing.com and on the worldofradio.com website. And furthermore, Continent Media is now webcast every Wednesday at 1830 UT on SIUE Web Radio. Continental Media is sponsored by Radio for Peace International and Universal Radio, offering quality amateur and shortwave radio equipment since 1942. For information or a catalog, call them toll-free at 1-800-431-3939 or visit Universal Radio on the web. It's www.universal-radio.com. On the previous edition, it turned out we had material only from the U.S., so let's begin this edition by covering media stories from elsewhere in the Pan-American continent. Bill Westnaver sends an Arts Canada report from CBC of June 23rd. Aboriginal Radio Network seeks to expand to add Montreal and Edmonton to its growing roster of stations across Canada. It's the Aboriginal Voices Radio Network. Margot Parisseau, Vice President of the Institute for the Advancement of Aboriginal Women, says the station would have a tremendous impact for Aboriginal women in Edmonton. Within 5 years of operation, the AVRN has been able to get licenses in Toronto, Calgary, Vancouver, Ottawa, and Kitchener-Waterloo. It broadcasts live via the Internet on a non-profit basis. The goal is to extend its reach to 27 major urban centers across Canada. Despite their proximity to the U.S., FM stations in the Bahamas are still considered a rarity, simply because when there's an opening from that area, they're usually overshadowed by the wealth of Florida stations. However, when conditions are just right, people do manage to pull in some Bahamas FM, such as the one on 94.9, reported to the WTFDA by Sean DeCesare in Providence, Rhode Island. It identified as More FM, M-O-R-E. This led to Mike Bugay of WTFDA finding a list of Bahamas FM, we're not sure if it's complete, from the TVRadioWorld.com website. So I'll list them quickly. 89.9, Splash FM in Spanish Wells. 93.5, Radio Abaco. 94.9, 94 More FM in Nassau, 96.1, Cool FM in Freeport, 97.5, Love 97 FM in Nassau, 100.3, 100 Jams in Nassau, 102.9, it's called Island 102.9, also in Nassau, as are the rest. 104.5 is Power 104.5, also known as ZNS FM, 107.1, ZNS 1, and 107.9, ZNS2. I know the top two used to be studio transmitter links of low power for the respective AM outlets. Not certain if that is still the case. And although they're still informally known as ZNS, those call signs really no longer apply since Bahamas became independent and the prefix block C6 was assigned to that country, as Doug Smith points out. There is a website, however, www.znsbahamas.com, which, among other things, includes a history of the national radio and TV broadcasting system. Mexico reactivates some shortwave stations unexpectedly, but others go to replace the new one. It seems 6105 in Merida is off the air again, according to Hector Garcia Bojorge, but he also revealed to the DX World that XCXQ in San Luis Potosí, Radio Universidad, has returned, 6045. It seems to sign on around 1200 UT and off around 0400. During certain hours, you may find the frequency more or less free of interference. John Wilkins in Colorado, Coomer DX, has been reporting it during the first hour before 1300, but the power appears to be only 250 watts. I've only heard traces of it. It's quite a weak signal. And the format appears to be mostly classical music. At least on June 26th, however, here is the programming reported by Hector Garcia Bojorge. Tune in at 12:15 when they were playing an Austrian march at 12:30 ID with address and phone number. Then some songs by a children's choir at 1300. A newscast began about the activities at the UASLP, that's the Autonomous University, at San Luis Potosí. En Conexión Digital, José Elias in Venezuela wrote to the station for more information and got a reply, saying that they were wondering if their shortwave signal, reactivated, was being heard beyond the city. So they'd be very interested in reception reports. The postal address is Arista 245, Zona Centro, postal code 78000, San Luis Potosí, SLP, Mexico. On the NRC AM list, Eric Flodin in Vancouver, BC, tells us about a book he found in his library. It's called Rebel Radio, The Story of El Salvador's Radio Venceremos, published in 1991 by José Ignacio López Vigil. It seems to cover the years 1979 to the early 1980s. You may recall Radio Venceremos was a very active clandestine for a while, somewhere in the middle of the 6 megahertz region. So you might want to look up that book, although it's quite partisan apparently in favor of the Frente Farabundo Martí para la Liberación Nacional. David Gleason in California retorts, I worked for a San Salvador FM in the early 80s and once had to wear a Kevlar vest around the station, so frightening was the environment. That should give you an idea why I do not find a station that called for random killing and violence something worthy of admiration. On a web search, I came across a site with MIDI examples of Colombian music styles, starting with the national anthem, if you like. It's www.geocities.com/fjmeja/english.html. In Shortwave Bulletin, Bjorn Malm in Ecuador says a good site with valuable info for us DXers, besides links to several radio stations in Latin America, you can download a list of all stations in Peru having a license. Of course, there are many more which do not, even on shortwave. No less than 2,184 are on the list in either PDF or Excel format. Via this link, www.radiodifusion.com/radios/peru1.htm. To DX Listening Digest, some remarks by Mickey Delmage in Alberta about Argentina. Normally at this time of year, Rye comes in very well here, Tuesday through Saturday UT at 0200 to 03 in English on 11710. June 26th was no exception, with a nice signal, including their 10-minute DX program around 0244 with some very current tips. I noted during the sign-on announcements they would appreciate receiving reports of 20 to 30 minutes. They mentioned they realized their signal does not get out well, so a 60-minute report might be hard for listeners to make. It was also mentioned that they would appreciate return postage of 3 IRCs and do not send cash as it's against postal regulations, and the dollars would probably not make it to them anyway. With all the cutbacks in shortwave, it's nice to hear Rye trying hard to reach listeners with current programming and understanding they have difficulties with their transmitter. Unlike Radio Cairo and Radio Georgia, to name a few, they punch out some pretty good power only to have a poorly modulated signal from the studio make listening unreadable. Letters to those stations seem to fall on deaf ears. If you get a chance, send Rye a letter or email. Just let them know you're still listening. We've reported recently that the 1680 station in Florida, which had travel info, although it's a regular-powered and not a low-powered station, WTIR, had been converted to a Spanish-language format. Here's more about that, sent to the NRC AM list by Patrick Griffiths, originating in the Orlando Business Journal of June 20th, headlined, WTIR Not Gone, Just Changing Frequency, Travel Network Getting Boost from Wattage, by Bob Mervin. Dateline Kissimmee, a plan for a statewide travel radio network aimed at tourists is edging closer to reality. Dick Kane, Florida Department of Transportation spokesman, says the ideas always had great potential. Yet for the past 4 years, the Travel Information Radio Network, a venture between a local broadcast entrepreneur and the state's transportation department, has tuned in mostly static. Economic conditions, bureaucratic delays, and fickle financing all have delayed the project. Now, though, with AM radio stations signing on to the idea, tweaked technology, a new website, and marketable programming, the Travel Information Radio Network appears poised for growth. 4 years ago, the state announced it was teaming with the private broadcaster Joe Geddes to create the network. The state's transportation department was interested in developing the network, if for no other reason than as part of its Intelligent Transportation Network, an info system designed to keep traffic flowing smoothly. I guess he means flowing. Plans call to provide a 24-hour statewide radio network broadcasting tourism information, weather reports, and travel advisories. The local AM station that was the prototype for the network, now called WLAA 1680, operated on an old frequency with what Geddes describes as a big hole in the broadcast coverage area. Marketing the fledgling information network to passing cars was the network's single biggest cost, erecting thousands of official blue roadway signs engineered to withstand 200 miles per hour winds, which needed to be placed along rights of way along the state's highway system. Now the network is making changes aimed at ensuring motorists will be more likely to hear it. It's switching over its Orlando radio station from 1680 to a more powerful transmitter in Ocoee, WTIR, there is the call sign now, on 1300. An improved signal from that 10 kilowatt AM should be on the air any day. By August 1st, the upgraded one-station network will add two more affiliates from Valdosta, Georgia on 910 and a new station on 1410 from Alachua near Gainesville. Three more stations covering Jacksonville, St. Augustine, and Daytona are expected to be operational by September 1st. Geddes says by Labor Day, we'll be able to reach the 33 million out-of-town motorists visiting the area on those three highways from Savannah to Palm Bay. The network program content is a 10-minute wheel of repeating information, regularly updated by the network and by local station. Six of the 10 minutes are produced for a statewide audience and will include everything from slickly produced 30-second features to a minute of traffic updates and lane closures on state roads, as well as reminders about seatbelt and child seat laws in the state. In addition to the minute of programming, the state also can take control of the entire network in the case of emergencies and natural disasters. The other 4 minutes are locally produced and contain 2 minutes of local advertising. Geddes says we found the content needs to be short. If anything is too long, people just change the channel and we lose them. The sophisticated website was not yet ready to stream when this was written. Check www.tirn.com. Rick Barton in Arizona has been checking out that new X-Band station in Fountain Hills near Phoenix, KFHX 1620, of questionable legality. He was unable to hear it 20 miles away and was wondering if it was still on the air. Then he says, I was in the Fountain Hills area, and it is alive and well. I don't know why I could not get a peep out of it the day before. I could hear it way down in the mud on 1620 from my location, about 20 miles north and west of Fountain Hills. I monitored the frequency mobile, and it started to fade in about 8 miles east of Fountain Hills as I wound up the pass into the McDowell Mountains that separate FH from Scottsdale, Phoenix. The signal came up rapidly. I heard the station well as far as 8 miles into the desert east of Fountain Hills when I turned around to head home. I was listening at mid-afternoon local time. They were playing a mix of oldies, pop, and rock with no announcer, though there were two clear canned IDs. So yes, they are still on the air. Tim Hall from Chula Vista, California, made a number of his rambling trips through the western U.S., lasting several kilomiles, visiting national parks and other places, and making extensive notes of the travelers' information stations to be heard at local range. His report appears in DX Listening Digest 3-107, going into great detail, but just a few of the interesting points. He says the only active TIS stations in Yellowstone are the 5 entrance gate stations and the one at Lake Village, Fishing Bridge, all on 1610. Another inside-the-park station was active at Madison 3 years ago, but not this year. Most of the other 24 or so listings for stations at individual attractions in the park, all of which would be very useful if they did exist, have probably been gone since the fire of 1988 and should be deleted. The five entrance stations all air the same message, and in addition there's one on 1600 at West Yellowstone, Montana, call sign WPWA 784, run by the Montana Fish and Game Department, which gets out well with message about aquatic pests carried by boats from one lake to another, and they give the wrong call sign, WDWA 784. A couple of his other catches in the area. On 5:30, there's a TIS in the Jackson, Wyoming area at the National Elk Refuge, still active, getting out well during the day. And also on 5:30 in the Arco, Idaho area, KOC 913, at the Idaho National Environmental Engineering Laboratory, with a brief tape loop about the nation's first nuclear power plant. Four transmitters were originally licensed, but apparently there's only one at the U.S. 20 and 26 split. This is Continent of Media 0304. Your input always welcome to WORADIO at yahoo.com or P.O. Box 1684, ENID OK 73702, USA. At our website, you'll find links to summaries for this and other editions of Continent of Media, and also to DX Listening Digest, where you may read much more about just about everything we mention. Check worldofradio.com. Those who remember with nostalgia the old WPTR 1540 in Albany, New York, in the 70s may want to check out a tribute site for it, found by Peter Jernikoff of DuPont in Wilmington. He says to the NRC AM list, "I grew up listening to this station in the 70s and spent a nostalgic few minutes checking out air checks, photos, music surveys, etc. Anyone remember screaming shotgun Johnny Ringo? He DJ'd in the mid to late 70s. It's www.1540.com. And 1540 is one word spelled out. Brock Whaley and Mike Cooper sent a story from the Baltimore Sun of June 22nd about a very unusual radio station in Wilmington, Delaware, WILM. Radio tuned to news, not profits. A small station sticks to its award-winning coverage even as media restrictions relax, attracting more unwanted corporate suitors. You can read the entire story at the link we'll provide or in Dix Listening Digest 3112. In an age of media consolidation, syndication, and robo-programs, WILM is fighting all three trends simultaneously. It spends gobs of airtime and revenue on locally produced programs. It respects listeners and is passionate about the news. It has not become part of a chain, and despite frequent lucrative offers and new regulations that may increase bidders' interest, WILM owners E.B. Hawkins and Sally Hawkins say they will not sell out. Valerie Geller, a New York-based programming consultant, says that's such a sweetheart station. Everybody is rooting for the ones like them that are the last of the Mohicans. Every day, you know, those owners are getting offers for millions and millions of dollars. One of the first stations to convert to a news and talk format in the 1970s, when it became clear that FM would dominate music and AM would have to do something else, WILM has ambitions and quality standards bigger than its market or its transmitter. Michael Harrison, publisher of Talkers Magazine, says they have a pretty hefty staff, and that's a very special thing. Pound for pound, when you look at their market size, they're a real powerhouse of journalism. WILM could boost profits by doing what hundreds of other stations have done, pair staff and pipe in cheap syndicated programming. Alternatively, the Hawkinses could simply sell out to a corporate owner that would probably cut costs, but they show no signs of doing that. Sally Hawkins says, "We're really not a big money-making concern. I mean, I've got 40 people on my payroll at a 1,000-watt AM, for God's sake. It gets to be a cause. I hate to say it. I never thought I'd get so carried away. Nobody else does what we do." Radio station brokers representing potential corporate buyers keep calling. What they really want is the cash flow so that they're in a better position to go public or to produce a return to shareholders, EB says. They certainly don't have an interest in the news. None. The brokers say, "I'm not sure you understand how much they'll pay." And I say, "I'm not sure you understand how much I'll turn down." Another station which is not sold out is WGRV in Greenville, Lenexa, Tennessee. There was a story about its golden anniversary on the AP wire around June 12th, sent on to us by Mike Cooper and Harry Van Vogt. For 50 years, friends and neighbors in Greene County have gathered around the radio at 12:30 p.m. every weekday to hear the news from the same familiar voice. Good afternoon, this is Maxine Humphreys. The newscaster greets her WGRV AM listeners, immediately jumping into a commercial for a funeral home, her longtime sponsor. Since 1953, Humphreys, who won't reveal her age but is likely in her early 70s, has delivered her 15-minute dispatches daily with the authority of Walter Cronkite and the homespun appeal of Aunt Bee from The Andy Griffith Show. She is a legend in Greenville, says Joe Hickerson, president of Dottie Stevens Funeral Home, her sponsor since she took the job. It wouldn't surprise me if one of every two radios in Greene County, and maybe more, is tuned to the noonday news with Maxine. Artie Bigley sends a story from the St. Petersburg Times in Florida, June 16th. DJ turns the dial back to the 60s online, about Richard Kaufman, who runs an online, internet-only, quote, radio station, unquote, the Solid Gold Time Machine, featuring old-school DJ chatter, more than 3,000 songs from 1955 to 71, and classic commercials and jingles from the 60s. It's www.60sradio.com. On the WTFDA list, John Brumall says the FCC has come up with a really fun new website detailing the history of TV from a technical standpoint. It's a rather complicated URL. I'll include the link on the summary. No plans have been announced for a radio version. Lest you be complacent, here's something else to worry about. Mike Cooper sends a story from USA Today by Mimi Hall. Warning, emergency alert system full of holes, safety experts pressing for high-tech upgrades. A truck transporting a toxic substance turns over on a highway near your house. A terrorist's radioactive dirty bomb goes off blocks from your downtown apartment. A line of tornadoes is bearing down on your church. How will you be warned right away and told what to do? Chances are you won't. The nation's emergency alert system, EAS, is broken. And despite frequent warnings from federal officials that terrorists could strike again, possibly with chemical, biological, or radiological weapons of mass destruction, little has been done since the attacks of September 11, 2001, to fix it. As a result, many Americans risk not knowing about a potentially dangerous situation until it's too late to do anything about it. Kenneth Allen, executive director of the Partnership for Public Warning, an organization of government emergency managers and industry executives, says if you get warned, it's as much luck as anything else. The partnership is raising concerns about the lack of a unified, coherent warning system. Most Americans have heard the three test beeps associated with the Cold War-era emergency alert system, formerly the emergency broadcast system, on their radio or TV, but experts say that system is functional in only a handful of states and outdated even where it works. It relies on TV networks and radio broadcasters voluntarily turning over airtime to government officials in an emergency. But decades after it was created, the system is hobbled by outdated equipment and lack of local participation. Even if most channels broadcast government warnings, if there's a chemical spill in the middle of the night in your neighborhood, you're probably not going to be watching CNN. In case there's any doubt about where Hal Turner is coming from, who has a show on WBCQ, this MSNBC story of June 22nd says that Richard Butler and other neo-Nazi members of the Aryan Nations had a get-together at Farragut State Park in Idaho, and a surprise guest from New Jersey was Hal Turner, talk show host, who does a daily broadcast of fiercely anti-immigrant, anti-Jewish, and anti-federal rhetoric. From the Council on American-Islamic Relations via Fred Waterer, we have news that they are starting Washington Live, a new talk show on satellite. Out of the nation's capital, it's on the Arab Radio and Television Satellite Network, ART, every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Dish Network, also by cable and satellite in other parts of the world. However, if it's live at that time, midnight UT Wednesday, it would be rather inconvenient in the Middle East. It deals with issues of concern to the North American Muslim and Arab communities. Inspired by the idea that Clear Channel will buy up as many stations as possible, here's another parody site called The Tick, WWV bought by Clear Channel, including this clip.
WWV, all the time, all the time. Same time, same station, every time, WWV. One, two, three, four. Every second counts at WWV. For a good time, call 555-4-WWV. WWV, for the time of your life. We'll be back with the time on WWV in just a minute. But first, here's another minute.
Thanks to Jeff Jason and Bruce Portzer of IRCA for that item. Here's the website to read more about it. www.mindspring.com/tilde-low-noise/wwv.html. Here's an incredible and disturbing story from Amateur Radio Newsline. Via John Norfolk, originating with W6EM at QRZ.com, a New York ham has been cited for having radio gear in his car, even though the state law governing scanner radios exempts licensed amateur radio operators. On May 31st, Richard C. Lalone II, KC5GAX of Calcium, says he was stopped while driving well under the posted speed limit by a New York State trooper and given a ticket for having ICOM IC1500 and 706 radios in his vehicle. Lalone says via his QRZ.com website that he did try to explain he was an amateur radio operator and even provided his license for the officer's review, but this was not good enough and a ticket was issued. He appeared in court on June 10th to answer the summons. He approached the judge with his license and a copy of New York Traffic Law 397 and a copy of PR Docket 91-36. Nevertheless, the judge instructed him to seek an attorney and be present in court on July 9th. If convicted of violating New York's scanner control law, Lalone faces the fine of $1,000, 6 months in jail, or both. Kim Elliott says, for info about the WLC Rogers City, Michigan HF email service for the Great Lakes, here's the website, also about other MarineNet stations, www.marinenet.net, or add-on/WLC.htm. For an exhaustive explanation of the windshield wiper sound or the swish swish sound you may hear at various places on shortwave, especially in the 4 and 13 megahertz bands, I refer you to not one but two articles in the July issue of Monitoring Times. Here's just a bit of what Mike Chase says in his Digital Digest. With a lot of sophisticated signal processing, today's CODARs are able to measure sea wavelength, period, travel direction, and speed. And by using two or more transmitting stations aimed at the same area of water, their reflected signals can be combined to produce info about the overall surface current direction. The signals have an unmistakable metallic shwip, shwip, shwip as the radar signal is swept across a narrow range of frequencies, typically about 20 to 50 kilohertz. Here's one of several websites referred to, www.codaros.com. Finally, via Andy Sennett, we have a website for Radio Free San Diego, the pirate on 96.9, including a coverage map and a challenge to the FCC. It's www.pirate969.org. And that's Continent of Media 0304. I'm Glenn Hauser.